Bernadette Russell, and this is How to Be Hopeful, a podcast all about hope, where to find it, how to find it, and how to keep hold of it once you have found it. This week, I'm very pleased to speak to the wonderful Gemma Seltzer, who I met at a WI meeting, which you'll be hearing about soon. And we're going to talk about the joy of talking to strangers, the beauty of finding peace, even in a city, the magic of London, and all about writing and how writing can bring you to hope. Hope you enjoy episode 14 of How to Be Hopeful. First of all, could you introduce yourself and tell us how you are today at this very moment in your lovely plant-filled room?
Ah, hey, good afternoon, Bernadette. I'm fine. I'm Gemma Seltzer. I'm a writer and I make all kinds of creative projects. I've written short fiction for the Photographers Gallery and performed it at the Venice Biennale, which has been one of the most fun things that I've done, and made radio documentaries. And I also collaborate with older adults on creative reading and creative writing projects. And I run Write and Shine, which is a early morning, well, it's a program of peaceful morning writing workshops, retreats and online courses celebrating the joyful, inspirational power of the morning. So we use the natural world, seasonal change, national days, key issues and things happening in society. And we use that in our writing as a starting point, and do a lot of work helping people find a great rhythm for their writing, and help people find a writing life through coming along to these early morning events. So that's all about me. And right now I'm good. Like I've been enjoying all the plants. We were just admiring a long trailing plant that's gone a bit wild in my living room and trailing all over the mantelpiece and onto the floor. And I've got flowers in vases, and I've got a big window that has a view of a monkey puzzle tree. So we're at the top of a building on top of a hill, and I can just look over this monkey puzzle tree. And in the morning, it's just filled with birds, and I'm really kind of just enjoying that. And I can sit here and listen to birdsong and all kinds of things just from my window. So all good today.
I can hear them, actually.
Can you?
Just as you said it, as if by magic, I heard the birds. Monkey puzzle trees are amazing, huh? They're extraordinary looking.
So, yeah, and having this view on the, like, looking down almost on top of the tree, I can't get over it. I've positioned my desk right, you know, next to the monkey puzzle. So, you know, I get up early. I love kind of getting up as the sunrise, and then there's the monkey puzzle, and then there's the birds, and there's the bird songs. And, you know, right now there's, well, what is there? There's magpies and parakeets. I mean, this is, urban life. But there's also coal tits, and we get goldfinch and, all kinds of things, like little tiny birds, sparrows, starlings, all kinds of things. So it's a lovely menagerie in the monkey puzzle tree in the morning.
I like that, Gemma. I like thinking of you as a sort of Disney-type heroine, sort of surrounded by birds and giant plants. It's very nice. Thank you so much for introducing your work. I'm going to dig in a little bit deeper to that in a while, so that people can hear a little bit more about it. As you know, I've been investigating hope for the last while, and it did actually, when I was thinking about it, I did think about you specifically when we met, which is quite a while ago. I think it was 10 years ago.
It was 10 years,
yeah. Gemma and I did a talk for the WI together in Blackheath, and Gemma introduced a fantastic project she did called Speak to Strangers, which was actually why I first sort of thought of you when I was thinking about hope, because I found that project really sort of joyful and hopeful. And I wonder if I know it's probably ancient history for you now, but if you could talk a little bit about Speak to Strangers, what gave you the inspiration to do that, to start that?
It was 10 years ago. That's wild, isn't it? So Speak to Strangers, yeah, was a project that I began maybe 10 or 11 years ago. And I really was just acknowledging that through my London life, I was just meeting a new person every day. And I would have these moments with strangers, maybe on the bus or just in the street or in the supermarket. And like we'd acknowledge something together, or we'd have a little chat, or there would be a moment that we would share. And it felt so fleeting, and it just kind of drifted away. And I wondered how I might capture it in words in some way, just to hold on to it for a moment more. So I started to write 100-word sort of short fiction, short pieces every day. So I'd meet a stranger, which I was doing anyway. So I wasn't necessarily going out of my way. I was kind of interested in how we chart, or how I charted everyday life. Like, how do you make the ordinary things in your life somehow elevate them, make them into something extraordinary? So I was meeting people anyway, and I turned them into these 100-word stories, and I shared them online through the project Speak to Strangers. So there were 100 stories in the end. Each of them were 100 words. So I kind of gathered 100 strangers together, and it came out as a book by Penned in the Margins of a year or so later. And subsequently, I took Speak to Strangers and my love of strangers all around the country. I was sort of joined different festivals. I did a Speak to Strangers in Birmingham and Manchester. And I had this amazing commission from the Tate Modern, where I was outside the building inviting strangers to talk to me. It's a slightly different angle on it, but inviting people to talk to me and tell me their story. Tell me a secret. Tell me something you haven't shared. And that was kind of incredible as well, just consciously talking to strangers and opening up a space for people to talk. And I'm just so interested in, how do you create the conditions for good conversations? How do you create the conditions to really connect with people, even if it's for 5 seconds? Like, that can be amazing. That can be transformative. Like, you share a moment with somebody and you know, it shifts things. And I have, during that Tate experience, it was a real invitation. I just sat with people and they told me things about their lives, about their families. And then I captured that and turned it into 100-word stories, which came out as a pamphlet. And I gave them back to the strangers who had shared their stories. And I think there's just something, for me, that project was really hopeful, just because it reminded me of the value of putting people in the spotlight, or having a moment to really be seen. I just loved being able to offer that to people. Like, I could listen, I could really listen and offer people space, and it opened up stories, and it opened up people, and that was really amazing.
Did you find that kind of people opened up and spoke to you easily for the most part, that they responded to your invitation easily for the most part?
Yeah. Well, in the first version of Speak to Strangers, it was like a secret mission. And I was around London chatting to people, and they didn't know that they may end up in one of my stories. So in that way, it was kind of, it was great. You know, it was all fictionalized version of events. So for me, you know, that was a lot about, like, how do you have good conversation? I feel like that's my life's work. Like, how do you ask the right questions? How do you reflect things back? How do you give people space? And how do you make it balanced as well? Because we all know that experience when you're having a chat with someone and you realize that actually it's quite one-sided. Like, that person is very happy to kind of talk about their experiences, but you as a listener, you know, you want it to go back and forth a bit, so you can get energy from them and you feel like they're interested in you. So gradually, you know, I learned some more skills just about, you know, contributing and offering and asking the right questions. And then with the other version of Speak to Strangers, where I invited people in, yeah, I did feel people were, even if they were hesitant to begin with, I tell you what it was food, actually, because I invited people to come and sit with me and eat strawberries. I think it was summer, we had ice cream and we had strawberries. And it was one of those things where you know, the main thing is you're eating, but you're also having a conversation. So that can lead you, and food is a great connector, isn't it? So yeah, food helped. And listening and, you know, giving people some space. When people realize they're being listened to, I mean, that is almost my favorite thing. When somebody suddenly realizes that you're listening to them, it's kind of incredible. And you realize that as a human being, you can just do that for someone. We can all do that for somebody. We can just listen to them. And we don't, because we're busy and our heads, you know, going all over the place. But just the power of listening to somebody else, genuinely listening and showing them you're listening. I mean, yeah, so all kinds of stories came out when I showed that I was listening.
I mean, there's a couple of things that I'm interested in that. One, the first thing is it, because I had a similar, I guess, experience alongside you at the same time doing what I was doing. One of the things that really struck me was, gosh, I'd accepted before that this sort of version of London, which was London isn't friendly and people in London don't talk to each other. And actually, I sort of found the opposite to be true, actually. And there was an appetite for people to talk to each other, which I heard from you when you spoke, which I found really encouraging as well. But also, secondly, that beautiful thing you were saying about the power of listening, because it feels particularly pertinent at the moment, actually. It's felt pertinent since 2016. It's always been pertinent, but since things started to feel a bit like everybody was getting a bit raggedy and angry and cross with each other and disagreeing, that feels like an incredibly important message that you've communicated right there, to just listen and to learn. And you miss things as well if you don't do it. You have to practice active listening, I guess. Would you say that's a skill you've got better at, do you think?
I love that you've just summarised it in that way. Yeah, I mean, when we met, I remember like feeling like we chimed together. We were both people who were Londoners and like passionate Londoners. I think we both like love the city. We both live in South London. We both kind of take a lot from being in the city, the energy of the city, you know, connecting through people. But a lot of that is also being able to pause and see and observe and, experience it really fully, because you're not dashing through all the time. So I remember, you know, we've kind of done some projects that have overlapped and really cared about the same thing. So, yeah, listening for me is again, like we're not taught how to listen, are we? Like, we can go on courses where you can learn how to do public speaking or presentation skills and learn how to be, you know, you can learn to be articulate and find the things that you want to say. I mean, I think because I'm a really quiet person and I'm introverted and I do a lot of kind of looking at people and wondering how everyone else is navigating the world, like, you can learn how to present yourself in public, I think. And I definitely have picked up those skills. But to learn to listen, I mean, it means, you know, stopping talking. It's stopping, you know, when your tongue's ready to move. It means, you know, curbing that instinct, which feels very hard. Like, if I've got something to say, I'm going to speak out. And of course, you know, as a woman as well, you know, we're often, you know, we're socialized to be quiet and make things easier for other people around us. And that's a lot to do with making yourself smaller, you know, and letting other people speak if they need to and facilitating that. So for me, like, listening, like, active listening is something. Yeah, it's definitely a skill. Every so often I'll meet someone who's actively listening, like yourself, Bernadette. Like, you can see people who have honed that skill, and it's just quite rare. So, yeah, I'm still on a journey with it. I like talking and I like meeting people. I'm talking now, you know. But listening, pausing, you know, I think it's transformative. It has the potential to transform our relationships, you know, improve your self-knowledge, increase our creativity and our happiness. There's a book that's just come out by Kate Murphy that's called You're Not Listening, and it really is just showing what happens when you don't listen, when things are missed, or when, you know, decisions are made through governments and other things, like when people are not listening to others, like, it can have really detrimental effects. So I believe in listening. And, you know, some of the work I've done over the years has been with older adults in care settings. And for me, you know, I work with that age group because I deeply believe that everyone's life is important, and the details are worthy of being recorded, and that the kind of older adults are often a group that don't get the same kind of support as others. But there's also, you know, for me, when I'm working in care settings, there's a noise thing going on, like the volume of people are shouting, you know, there's kind of the dining room, there's everything going on, like, there's a real volume. It's really hard to listen and have kind of sustained quiet conversations. So a lot of the work I do in care homes is more kind of intimate, quiet collaborations that might be between one person or just a couple of people, where you use listening and you use silence and you see what happens in the space when people aren't talking, because that's often where the most interesting stuff happens, the stuff between the words you're between what you're saying, there can be some really joyful, interesting stuff happening.
It's lovely, isn't it? It's kind of, it made me think about when I was listening to you talking about sort of listening as part of compassionate practice, or as part of thinking about being kind and generous. And also I was thinking, I wonder if, I don't know what you think about this, but I was just thinking, I wonder if some people who aren't used to being listened to, that's kind of why once someone like you lends an ear, listens and pays attention, it floods out. You know, I know some of the people I think that I work with is found it difficult to start talking, and then it was a flood of talking, which is really quite overwhelming in a good way. But I think perhaps some people don't get listened to, and that might include older adults, sometimes children as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and listening isn't just kind of sitting looking at someone, it's kind of being alongside as well. Like sometimes if I'm working in a nursing home or kind of a community setting, like sometimes you can just be sitting like side by side with somebody. And you know, reading, like I've done creative reading projects where actually what we're doing is reading side by side. And you know, you're not actually like waiting for, you know, it's the thing of you're not waiting for the other person to talk. That's not listening. Like that's, I don't know what that, you know, that is part of conversation. But actually listening, sometimes you're not waiting, you're just there with someone. So yeah, the kind of one project that I'm just kind of reflecting on is I did with Roehampton University, and it was called Lifelong Reading. And it was, you know, like we say, we used children's books actually, and we all sat alongside each other and just flicked through children's books and read a bit and chatted and, you know, went back to reading. And for me, like, that is about compassionate listening. That's just about being with people and not having, you know, the expectations we put on each other all the time. You know, when you're in a conversation with someone, you feel like you've got to be massively interesting or like say fascinating things. Like you can't do that all the time, but I definitely can't. Just listening, not just being waiting for someone to fill the silence with words. I think that's what I'm interested in.
Mm. Yeah, I think that point's really pertinent, not just waiting until it's your turn to speak. And the thing you said earlier as well is feeling like your tongue wants to, you know, that feeling is something you just get better at, I think, with practice, but also have to continue working on. So thank you for speaking about listening. It's good to be reminded of it, and so pertinent at the moment, I think. Another thing that really sort of fascinates me about your work, you do loads of amazing projects, but one of the things that connects with Write and Shine, I think, but is your interesting sort of passion for London, and inside or alongside or within that passion for London, a sort of yearning to within that find peaceful places, which was the collection of yours, and sort of places of beauty in silence and quiet and pause. And I wondered if you would speak about that a little bit, your project called Look Up at the Sky and the Peaceful Places Collection, and how you came to want to do that and what that is, because I thought it was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Look Up at the Sky was a project, involved me. I'm just always interested in unpeeling the layers of the city. I mean, I love the city. I love, and I miss it. I miss kind of being in the buzz of central London. And whenever I go on holiday, it's always to cities. I mean, I just get so excited about, you know, the diversity of people and the kind of turning a corner and who knows what you will see. And I was born in London. I've lived in different places, but I was born in London and, you know, lived in South London for a good number of years. And I'm always interested in just, you know, turning in a different direction or finding a different way of looking at London. So Speak to Strangers, for example, was one way of looking at London through the people who live here. I did another project called 5 a.m. London, which was a collaboration with a photographer, and we arrived at different places in London and he took photos, and we wrote kind of a fictional blog, a story of someone in the streets at that, in the early hours. And that was like looking at London. Like, what does it look like at 5 a.m.? What does it feel like? Who's there? And how do you chart the city through the early morning in that way? And Look Up at the Sky was kind of part of those projects as well. And I walked along the Thames in London every week Bridge to Bridge, and I wrote about the experience. And, you know, creatively, I was interested in how writing and walking connect. And that's a lot to do, you know, quiet and thinking and observing. So how does walking and writing connect? And is there a way the rhythm of walking finds a way in your writing? So the movement, the forward propulsion, the noticing things around you, is there a way that rhythm of walking can be present in your writing? And along the way, I just kept a list of the quiet little spots along the way. And, you know, you mentioned it, I created a collection of peaceful places in London, and it was a map. And then it's on the Guardian travel pages for London now. So kind of a top 10 list of peaceful places. And they're not the obvious ones necessarily. They're kind of a corner that you might turn and find it very quiet. It's like a library stairwell or kind of moment, or you know, a less popular bridge in London. So these quiet places just felt, really meaningful. For me, writing and quiet and walking are all interconnected. Like, how do you listen to your thoughts? I mean, I don't know what your head's like, but mine, you know, everything, you're so overstimulated. There's so much going on. I'm always looking for a place where I can be calm and just hear what I'm really thinking. Like, I don't feel like I'm a very instinctive person. I struggle to make a decision with things. And sometimes I think that's because I've got so much rattling around in my head. Like, I can't hear what I feel about things. So yeah, being the look up at the sky was a kind of project about finding some peacefulness in London, still like absorbing the energy of the city, but finding kind of a peace in the pauses. It's, you know, a peaceful moment just to listen and observe and learn. And the city just keeps on giving. I mean, the more I look at it, the more I love it, the more there's things to learn. So yeah, that was the project.
And it was beautiful. It is beautiful. It feels like it's an invitation to let yourself revisit places in a different way, I think, which is really nice. So just as my experience, which will come up on to a moment, joining you very early in the morning, and I'm not a morning person, what was really brilliant about that was just realising that a place that is very familiar can be utterly different at midnight or in the really early hours of the morning or as the sun rises. See, that feels like another gift, that you're re-gifted something really fantastic and a sort of opportunity to experience the magic of that. Actually, was really lovely. I'm very interested in how all creative practice and art, in the broader sense, but particularly writing, can give people hope in that it empowers them, which is why I'm attracted to your work. And one of the things I really loved about your Write and Shine workshops is that there's no sharing. I don't know if you've ever had any feedback for that. Actually, I found it, and other people talked to me about finding that really liberating, because it just felt really nice and relaxing and freer, knowing that I didn't have to share it, which it meant that if you wrote personal things or intimate things or clumsy things, you wouldn't have to have that experience of sharing it. And I just want, is that sort of standard practice in your workshops, Gemma, that you, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's a deliberate thing. I mean, so I set up Write and Shine about 5 years ago. In fact, this week is our fifth birthday, which I'm very excited about.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. So the idea really is, I really want to offer time and space for people's creative ideas to surface in a really fast paced world. It's for busy people to kind of make space for creativity. So we meet early in the morning around 7:15, and then it's a 90 minute workshop, kind of quite tightly packed. We use that 90 minutes for writing and thinking and kind of getting deep into some ideas. And then we go off and do the rest of our lives. So it's like just a burst of morning creativity to set you up for the day. And because in the morning is the best time for thinking, imagining and dreaming, and writing early helps you bypass that inner critic that rises up and tells you that you you know, that you're no good or that you should be doing all that stuff on your to-do list and actually why are you bothering doing all this? You know, you bypass that by just going straight into it. So for me, like, use that early morning is so special. Like, if you've committed to getting up and going straight to the page to writing, like, it's great for just doing the writing. I feel really strongly about that. Just do the writing. I really believe you learn to write through writing. That you can go to, of course, that is very valuable to go to workshops and get critiques and get reviews and, you know, people review your work and learn from tutors and learn from books. That stuff is really vital. But alongside that, just doing the writing really matters. So, you know, that's one of the reasons, like, we don't share work because actually we've got a short period of time and just want you to fill your notebook and generate work and see what happens and trust that the words will come. You know, sometimes if you're not writing for a while, it feels really hard to face the blank page because what on earth are you going to write? But actually in this workshop, I kind of hold the space and we do writing exercise after writing exercise and you leave the session with a few different pieces and maybe one of them has allowed you to access a new idea and, you know, and you can pursue that outside of the session. And, you know, for me, there's also something really important about creating a democratic space for writing. I mean, I've been working as a writer for 10 or more years, and there's so many different places you can go to learn writing or kind of be with writers. I haven't found them all particularly welcoming. There's a formality to it. You know, writing or learning about literature is often associated or connected with academic environments. You know, there's the tutor and that person's got all the knowledge and you listen to what they're saying. You know, I really wanted to create something that was about generosity and kindness and accessible for people who are not necessarily wanting to be writers. Some people are, you know, writing professionally or regularly, but it's equally just for people to come and explore writing. And, you know, we're very friendly, it's very warm. And, you know, things like at the beginning of a Write and Shine session, I don't ask things about like what you've had published or kind of what your aspirations are about your writing. We ask kind of questions when we get to know each other. There might be questions about, I don't know, what your favorite meal is or kind of how you're feeling that morning. Like, just a way that everybody in the room has got something to offer and we can all contribute. And I view my role as a facilitator. You know, I organize the sessions, I lead the sessions, I hold the space, but I know that people in the room are just as insightful and creative and have got plenty to offer. So for me, there's a friendliness or a warmness and a lack of formality. And I mean, we laugh a lot. I mean, the session you came along, we laugh our head off sometimes. Like, yeah. And it's a writing workshop that's happening at 7:15 in the morning, and we are just having just the best time. So for me, that's really special.
About the spaces you choose, Gemma. I mean, I've only been to two workshops, but I think that's really important and really fantastic as well. In that one was outside, and we just had a really beautiful walk, and it was a sensationally beautiful morning. But the other one was in the Quakers Meeting House, which was also a really beautiful room. Do you think that that's important where the space, where the sessions happen?
Yeah, oh, that's such a nice point. Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think about that a lot. Just like, again, I've just, you know, another one of my beliefs about writing is just that, you know, writing isn't separate from your life. Like, it's not like you go away and be a writer. It's, you know, we're not waiting for a moment where you suddenly get days and days free. I mean, we never have that, like days and days to write or go off in somewhere separate from life to write. I think, you know, there's ways of making creativity part of what you do every day. And so I love using spaces that, you know, that might come to life around us. Like, we use, you know, bookshops. We work with Waterstones and some of the bookshops we're allowed in early, and then they start to come to life around us, and that can really invigorate your writing. And the same as the Quaker Meeting House, it's in Leicester Square, so you're there and you're kind of crossing all these roads with, you know, really significant parts of London, but then you go into the writing workshop. So it's the sense that you're writing in the real world. And that feels really important. So very beautiful spaces, very peaceful, but real life as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they were both really inspiring, which helped, actually. It helps to sometimes just be able to look and rest your eye on something interesting or beautiful, you know. Yeah. It's really lovely. I forgot to ask you at the beginning, actually. So I'm sorry about this. I'm skipping back because we got into other things, which was great. I just wondered, obviously, because I'm thinking about hope and I'm focusing on hope, which is partly why I wanted to speak to you, whether you've noticed anything or there's anything that's happened or you've seen this particular week that's made you feel hopeful or happy or not, doesn't have to be, and what that might have been and why.
Well, a few things. So, in the Write and Shine world, we're about to launch our program. So there is, and our overarching theme for summer is going to be about community. So I've just been noticing this kind of move out, out of lockdown and into the world. And what are the ways that we've found of connecting with people? And how is it that, our neighbourhoods look different now, don't they? Like, noticing our neighbours that we might not have seen before. And, I've got sessions about gossip and solidarity and, what it is to be in the world, be part of a community and celebrating the Write and Shine community. And we've commissioned an amazing artist called Emily Hayworth Booth, and she's created an illustration for our season, which is really beautiful and captures this sense of community while in lockdown and kind of peering out tentatively into the world as well. So that's been quite joyful for me. I guess in the broader sense, this week I get the Black Lives Matter movement has given me incredible hope. It's been really difficult to watch what's happening and, doing the work that a lot of us are doing as white people to kind of really think about how we move around the world and the impact of our actions. I mean, it's also vital, the fight for racial justice. And for me, it's been amazing to see so many people that I know and out in the wider world doing the inner work needed to understand each other and to undertake really deep listening that we were talking about that earlier, and taking action in a way that feels right and not just taking action because you feel you have to, but really finding out what kind of actions you can take. And I think I'm hopeful at this moment, just hearing a lot of people talk, look, there's not just one way to protest or to be an activist or to contribute to social change. And I feel like in this moment, that feels really, that's coming out really prominent. I'm really thrilled to have the conversations I'm having with people and what I'm seeing. There's just a range of ways that people can act for change. And, one article that I was really inspired by was on was by Gal Dem, and it was just talking about, not everybody can physically gather and march and protest. And actually taking to the streets, maybe puts your life at risk or the life of your loved ones. But other forms of activism are so important, self-care, learning, listening, connecting with Black-led organisations, donating, supporting those around you in your immediate community. All of these are really vital actions. So I think, what gives me hope, I'm also, I feel a lot of feelings and I'm scared and I'm worried and I'm all of that. But the hope that I'm kind of starting to see is just that we all start to work out what it is that we can contribute and do. And, the worst thing that can happen out of this moment is that we don't do anything, and not knowing what to do can sometimes be, not knowing what to do, even if you want to do something, is hard, like not knowing who to ask or what to, who to look to. So I'm just seeing people work out what they're step forward is, and that gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, I agree with you about it's very hopeful and pleasing to see that there's a discussion about the full range of engagement in terms of activism for lots of kinds of social change, because I find that sometimes people I've been speaking to have been overwhelmed by the enormity of challenges that we have to deal with. Black Lives Matter and climate change things, and they feel massive. So I think letting people know that small actions can be effective, standalone small actions, but also cumulatively can be effective, feels really important. And learning in quiet and listening, as you said, is really important as well. Look forward to seeing what else carries on. This just feels like the beginning, a really exciting sort of new beginning.
And it may, that makes me think of a lot of what I admire about your work, which is kind of a day-to-day, like really a step each day. I mean, your project 365 Days of Kindness, the Kindness Project, where actually you're doing an action every day, and that feels so valuable at this moment in time. It doesn't, like you say, it doesn't need to be a huge thing, but if every day we're all committing to doing one thing that impacts somebody else's life, I mean, yeah, the world can potentially change. So something every day, that feels powerful.
Finding what we can,
yeah.
I wondered if you can't, Gemma, this is fine as well, if it feels like I'm sort of crowbarring my ideas into your ideas. But I'm genuinely interested in whether writing, creative writing, the practice of writing, or any kind of writing, has the potential to foster or encourage hope in people, particularly if they're feeling despair, whether you think that writing can offer a sort of lifeline if somebody's feeling despairing, feeling that things can't change, feeling that they can't change things in a larger sense or for their own lives, that writing can offer people hope. Because I feel like, certainly in your work, that it can be really empowering, which is hopefully what leads to it being able to bring people out of despair, to offer them a lifeline to a sort of brighter place.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in each session at Write and Shine, you know, I do a lot of work beforehand just to help people find a way into accessing their imaginations, because I encourage everybody to approach the page really openly. We do a lot of free writing, flow writing, just do word association, just start writing with your pen and see where you end up. And that's a way of approaching the page with just hope and optimism and trust that the writing will take you where you need to go. And writing will show you ways of like a fresh way of imagining the world. And I do believe that. I think it can be challenging to tap into your imagination. It's so unknowable. I mean, I have had workshops where, you know, I've done something like, if you were an animal, what would you be? Like, you know, in the beginning, like we move around the circle and I'll ask people their names and something like that. And some people, you know, that's a fun question, but it's also a very hard question I've never thought of myself as an animal. I'm not an animal. Like the logic bit of your brain is like, well, I don't know, you know, and then you start thinking, actually, that journey to tap into your imagination is hard. It's hard for a lot of us, and it can be thwarted. You know, if you haven't got space for creative thinking, then it's really hard to access that. So I think, you know, allowing like 10 minutes of writing in the morning is a really good way in. Like, set a timer. I love doing a timed exercise. Set a timer on your phone or whatever for 5 or 10 minutes, and just write freely. Like, choose a word and write freely on it, and you're hopefully, like, unexpected ideas will arise. And it gives you energy. It's kind of satisfying. And yet if you're not sharing it with anyone, it doesn't really matter what comes up. And I think writing's just a way to help you hear yourself. Like, you know, it is about wanting to share it with other people, maybe eventually, and publishing or offering your work into the world in some ways. But, you know, what we're doing at Write and Shine, and what I really value, is just giving space to putting it on paper and seeing what's there, because I do believe you learn to trust your own voice. You learn to trust it and hear what's coming up and realize that it's perhaps distinct from other people's voices. And that really helps you foster empathy for others. You start to, you know, we have those moments where you suddenly understand how distinct everybody's mind must be and what kind of thoughts you might be having and what other thoughts other people will have. I mean, it's quite magical, like, to start writing and suddenly get a glimpse of your voice, or just suddenly hear it somehow. And then it helps, you know, it starts to help you connect with other people. I mean, there's a really nice quote from American poet Nikki Giovanni, which I have now on my desk. And she says, writers don't write from experience, although many are hesitant to admit that they don't. If you wrote from experience, you'd get maybe one book or maybe three poems. Writers write from empathy. I love that. Writers write from empathy. Yeah. So that's what I think the value is of writing, to understand yourself and start to understand others as well.
I think what is also very empowering about it and useful is that, because I started out working in theatre, and theatre's brilliant for being a collective practice, but it's dependent on collective practice. Whereas I guess writing, like painting and other solo sort of creative activities, you can actually, if you've got a scrap of paper and a pencil, even if it's a bit broken, you can get on and do it. So in that way, it's really empowering. You don't even need to have much money, as you said, you don't even need to have much time. So I think that's sort of a really empowering thing. Gemma, why for you is the morning particularly it's so funny? When I came to your walk, which I'd recommend to everyone, it was absolutely fantastic early morning walk. We met in Sloane Square, do you remember?
Yeah, and we met, it was like 6:30, wasn't it? We met really early.
And I think I was so scared of being late that I got up at like 4:30. It was mad. Anyway, it was really, really super early. And I am not a morning person, but actually it was really wonderful because of that. I reread over what I'd written and it was really interesting. I didn't even recognise it, which is kind of amazing. It's very different. But I wondered, has that always been a practice for you? That kind of, have you always been up with the magpies and cockatoos?
Yeah, I have. I think, yeah, I've got a rhythm in my body that means that I wake up early anyway. And I've definitely honed it over the years. I like being up before anybody else. I just, I know I need a lot of quiet, actually. I think that's it. I know I need a lot of quiet. I need to think. So I love getting up early and just having a block of time, which is uninterrupted. And I'm awake before anybody else and before the world around me starts to wake up as well. And like you say, I think it's also like you can trick yourself into doing the writing, like just get up, make a cup of tea, obviously, and go straight to the page. And I do Julia Cameron's morning pages, kind of her artist way idea of just writing 3 pages of free flowing stuff, just put it all down. So I do that in the morning. And I find that, I mean, I find it fun, actually. Like, I'm really incentivized to do it. I like getting up to do it. I meditate in the morning and, you know, I also do a bit of daydreaming and a bit of reading. It feels like a secret space that, I guess it's like a dream world, isn't it, really? You're still half awake. You know, one of the things about lockdown is, you know, we're not leaving our houses. So I'm staying in my flat. Going straight to the page, and there's a kind of slowness as the day unfolds. So I'm writing and feeling the day, just kind of having the easing into the day slowly, which I find has helped me, yeah, hear myself think. It's helped me do more writing. I think I just enjoy it, and I think I'm probably addicted to it, which is why I set up Write and Shine, because I just love mornings. And sometimes I do a Write and Shine workshop and I have so much energy, and it's like, you know, it's 6:30 in the morning and I have a lot of energy and I can't wait for people to arrive and I can't wait to share ideas and hear what people have been thinking. You know, it's just the rhythm I'm in. Just the light is different. I love seeing the early morning light. You can see the seasonal changes really clearly if you get up early. Like, the sunrises feel different, the birdsong feels different. Yeah, I don't know. I get a lot of energy from it, and I find it, I guess, you know, it just is quite sustaining and grounding. Like, whatever's going on in my life, I generally am getting up early, and so I give myself that space before I throw myself into the day. I just give myself a little bit of space. Yeah, so that's quite grounding. And just caring for myself in that way by being up early and giving myself the quiet that I need in order to get through the day.
Well, it was quite an influence on me, and I have, not every day, but I have got up early, and I've kind of been up with the birds a few times as well, and a few times to see the dawn, and it does feel like you're getting a kind of secret extra day before the day. It's amazing. So yeah, it was a really very positive experience that lasted for a long time with me. Gemma, although obviously I'm assuming, well, you've told me as well, that things have changed in your practice in terms of your writing workshops, with how you're delivering Write and Shine. How has that been, that shift from being able to deliver things by going on walks with people or being in rooms with people to being online? What's that been like?
Yeah, well, initially, you know, lockdown threw everything out, you know, definitely was questioning how I would continue what we're doing with Write and Shine. So what we're doing now and what we did through summer is offer our workshops virtually via Zoom. And we've kept, we've also got an online library, which are full of self-guided courses that you can subscribe to the library. And every week we add a new writing course. And there's things from, a really lovely one is The Sea. I've just written a new one called Voice. And it's about, you know, things that we talked about today. It's about listening and about dialogue and about speaking out. So the range of writing courses there, I, you know, was able to keep offering those and found more and more people were finding them meaningful whilst they're at home. So there's the online library and then the virtual workshops via Zoom. Kind of incredible. We've been able to support and engage with people all over London, all over the UK, over, you know, in Europe as well. Different kinds of people have found them accessible. And because I think 90-minute workshops, they're quite... you know, we don't have a break, we're just there for 90 minutes. People can sustain the attention for that long. We've got a great community around us. So people were kind of coming back regularly. So we're doing them once or twice a week and people were coming back. And this kind of sense of the community evolving and supporting each other online was, you know, continued. And you know, I've had the feedback I've had has been really extraordinary, just how it is to feel connected to people when you're not together. I mean, one of the things I do encourage is, you know, we've got the screen, we've got the Zoom rectangles, but when we're writing, we shift away ever so slightly, you know, just turn to the side and write in your notebook, because we're all getting a bit Zoom fatigue, aren't we? Like staring at a screen all the time. But, you know, to keep our energy up and to keep our focus on writing is so, you know, when you're on your laptop, you can be distracted in a million ways. So, you know, I set the exercise and we kind of chat together and then we turn to the page. So that's a really vital part of the workshops that I was offering in person anyway, this sense of being part of a community, writing alongside each other, but still making space for writing. You know, that's what we're, the aim of the workshops is to give people writing time. So it's kind of been amazing to see that in our sessions, we're connecting up through the screen, but actually the activity's happening still on the page and in people's notebooks. So yeah, they're great. The sessions have been going so well. A lot of them have been selling out and we're so thrilled to, you know, launch our new season, summer. It's all going to be virtual workshops again.
Well, so yeah, tell us what's coming up in the summer in case. Oh, and when would be useful, wouldn't it?
So we run in seasons. So we take inspiration from the natural world and the all the events happening around us. So summer will be throughout July and August. We're going to have, we've got some amazing stuff. We've got workshops every week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We've got writing retreats from the comfort of your own home. We've got two guest tutors. So one is Emily Hayworth Booth, who did our illustration, which I'm thrilled. I can't wait to share that with the world. So she's contributed through the illustration and she's running a workshop about the connection between creativity and drawing and writing, and that's in July. And Rachel Long, who's a brilliant poet, is doing a session up in August, and we're kind of making sure we're continuing and deepening ways of amplifying Black voices. So we've got a session that's all about it's 20 years since Zadie Smith's White Teeth came out, so we're doing a workshop about neighbourhood, and that's going to be celebrating her work. And we've also got lots of workshops on summertime joys. So we've got one on butterflies. Oh, it's butterfly season and the full moon that's coming in July. So and the, as I mentioned, our overarching theme is about community, and that feels, I mean, that's just a concept that feels so vital now, like how we're connecting with each other, why it matters to be part of a community where you live and beyond, how we're supporting other people around us. So community is coming through in the workshops we're running, the retreats, and just a general celebration and acknowledgement of our creative community that rises early, 6:30 in the morning, 7 in the morning, rise early to write and make that effort and support each other to kind of live a creative life and grow in empathy, like we were talking about earlier, and listen to each other and just fill your notebook, because it's just amazing to have to inject your life with creativity. It's transformative.
Thank you. And if someone's listening, Gemma, and they would like to join in, do you is it the kind of thing you have to sign up for the whole season, or can you drop in on one? Or
yeah, you can do both. So we've got a membership scheme, so it's like a class pass, so you can sign up to all our sessions, and you also get some added treats and surprises along the way. Or you can just do a drop-in as well. They're kind of one-off sessions, they're self-contained, so you can just come to one and see what it's like. So yeah, the virtual workshops are available a couple of times a week, and then the online library is free for 7 days, so you can just go and explore that library, enjoy the writing courses, see if it works for you, and then it's a subscription every month that you can pay to access it, and they're self-guided courses. They kind of last about 30 minutes or so, and there's a whole range of them online, so again, like, you can enjoy them from the comfort of your own home early in the morning.
Brilliant. And yeah, the best place to check that out, could you just say your website address? I'll make sure it's in the copy as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're on all the social media, so you can look up Write and Shine. Otherwise, it's write-and-shine.com.
Brilliant. Oh, thank you. And I really recommend it. Whether you are a Rise with the Birds or Night Owl, whichever version of Birds you are, really recommend it. It was both times I've managed to attend a workshop, and I will hope to attend some more in the future. Really, really fantastic. It's such an interesting range of people.
And
both times it really stayed with me for a long time, the conversations and the stimulation. So thank you, Gemma, and thank you for taking time to speak to me.
Oh my goodness, I've loved it. Thank you for inviting me along.
Here's to writing and to hope and to joy.
all of that. Thank you, Bernadette.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Lots See you soon. Love. Bye.
Much for listening. I hope you have found in the last few months, and will continue to find, a little bit of space for creativity, whatever that might be for you, because I do think it's hugely helpful for our well-being and positive mental health, and can help keep us hopeful and happy. I'll look forward to meeting you again next time. Bye.